We are indeed. It was a big breakthrough, really, and it made up for some of the shortcomings maybe of the previous strategy, which were kind of done in a silo. So to have the input from organisations such as ourselves, which we were involved in, Miriam and many other organisations across the country, it gave the developers of the plan a really big picture and a broad picture of the situation on the ground that my staff and Miriam's staff are dealing with day in, day out.
On the face of it, Miriam, the budget seems sizable, €363 million, to be provided under the four pillars: protection, prevention, prosecution and policy coordination. Is that comprehensive enough? And do you feel that there's enough funding there to last and to cover what's required over the course of the 5 years?
Well, I think it's a huge commitment on behalf of the Minister at the moment anyway to put that much money into it. And like as Siobhan has said, the consultation process in developing this strategy was very, very real. Everybody was consulted. People on the ground really felt they were listened to. And that, as we can see in the layout of the strategy over the next 18 months anyway, it is, and the Minister has assured us all that this is a live document. It's not a strategy that's going to be sat on a shelf. It'll be monitored and evaluated and amended as need be over the course of the next 5 years. So, you know,
Siobhan,
I mean, No, I was just going
to say,
there probably never is enough money. Everybody will always be looking for something else. But, you know, I think there is a fantastic start made to it.
Okay, Siobhan, under the strategy, as I touched on in the introduction there, the number of places available in women's refuges will also rise. It's going to go up pretty much double from 141, where it's currently at 280. I guess an increase in refuge places for domestic violence victims is to be welcomed, but I heard Roisin Shortall saying under the Istanbul Convention, we're actually required to have 340 places. So in that sense, is 280 sufficient? Do we need to possibly even go further than that and go close to trebling the current number of places?
Exactly. I mean, the numbers are based on old information. I mean, the census has come out recently. We've got a larger population than we've had since the 1840s. So the numbers that have been spoken about were numbers that were developed quite a number of years ago. So I suppose this is always a concern with a strategy. You know, numbers are put out, money is put out. I mean, if you talk to anybody dealing with environmental emissions or SNAs or house building, strategies are one thing, numbers and money is another thing. But they have to be real, as Miriam said. It has to be amendable, it has to be changeable. Now, any increase in numbers, and I would put in the caveat, it depends on what that means. What does extra bed space mean? There are 9 counties in the country that do not have a refuge at all. That definitely needs to be addressed immediately. But what else does it mean? Does it mean literally beds on, you know, in hotels? Does it mean, you know, mattresses on floors? Or does it mean actual refuges that have full wraparound services? And what I mean there is fully equipped refuges that have access to services around housing, around mental health, around substance misuse. You know, it's not just about a bed and a pillow. It's about much more than that. The more than a bed in a hospital is not just about the physical bed. It's about the structures that are around that to make sure that person who is seeking refuge and seeking support gets the full suite of their needs met, not just the very basic need of, you know, a roof over the head and a wall between them and the perpetrator. So great to have it written in the strategy. The proof is in the pudding, I suppose, when we see what it actually looks like.
Yeah, and Miriam, I guess, is there a need for more safe houses and step-down accommodation that, you know, refuges for high-risk people who are experiencing abuse, and perhaps not everyone would want to go to a refuge?
Well, I think that is an issue. And I also happen to know that one of the big issues that all of the refuges are facing at the moment, that even when a woman and her children come to refuge, get settled, they very often end up stuck there for quite a long time because the following on housing that's available to them is not there. So that's another whole ballpark about moving on accommodation from refuge and stuff like that. And in the midst of a housing crisis, that's a nightmare for people, you know.
It absolutely is, Brian, just to jump in there. And that's why I mean, when I said we have to have a full suite of services around each of these new beds. A new bed isn't enough. Step down accommodation, safe house accommodation, all of those are very useful and very important, because it needs to be a kind of trajectory from the woman, from the moment she gets her first need of a service, be it a phone call, a helpline call, an outreach call, to coming into refuge, if that's her choice, or not even if that's her choice, if that's what's within her power. And then after that there's a whole kind of spectrum of services put in to meet her needs and the needs of her children, that they aren't just, as Miriam said, kind of caught in a bottleneck, then moved from one spot to another, because unfortunately we have seen that too much in other sectors and other parts of our society. And just to go back to the money, if I may, I mean, absolutely extra financing is important, but we are in a cost of living crisis as well, and we have staff who have dedicated their time and their, you know, their health almost over the last number of years. They're skilled, highly skilled, and we want to keep that staff. So we need that staff to be treated in the same way that their public sector equivalents have been treated. We want to be able to give them, you know, an adequate cost of living. So the money has to be tied, or the finances have to be tied to the rate of inflation. We need to be able to give them adequate employment opportunities and employment conditions. So, you know, things like paid maternity leave, all of these things, you know, we are constantly trying to hold on to our amazing staff so that they don't either leave us and go into other sectors or leave altogether. Because, you know, finance is one thing and big chunks of money sounds like a lot, but when it's divvied up over 5 years, over, you know, maybe 40 or 50 services, it suddenly becomes a smaller pot, and we don't want to be fighting for resources. We want to be able to roll this strategy out properly, you know, from the get-go. And like I said, it seems very promising with the multi-agency approach, with the oversight from the Taoiseach's office, though we are getting a new Taoiseach soon, so priorities may change, but at least there is that promise of having a dedicated national statutory agency who will have oversight to ensure that the plan is implemented. That's very important. But there are also the, you know, as I said, the devil's in the detail, you know, the little nuances that we have to be aware of in order to make sure the strategy is a success. It's the third one, you know, it's, we need outcomes, positive outcomes at this stage.
Yeah, and can
Siobhan,
I jump?
Can you, can,
sorry,
yeah,
I was just going
mind.
To jump in and suggest that, like, one of the key things to bed this strategy in is the formation of the new agency, and because that's going to be an interdepartmental agency, and you know, my experience back about 15 years ago in the Midwest, the Regional Planning Committee, which was a multi-agency committee that met about six times a year. That committee was really effective in implementing changes on the ground and was a huge support to the agency. So if I would be agitating that, like, the work of that committee would be kind of duplicated in the setting up of the new agency. There was huge openness between the departments and between the agencies involved in it.
You're both obviously working at the coalface within the County of Clare and the region. Siobhan, if I can just go to you first on this, and can you give us a sense of how you think services in Clare in particular are going to benefit or improve from this strategy?
Well, I mean, like you said, it talks about more than just, it has a wider remit. It brings in the prevention, protection, prosecution and policy coordination. So moving on from just the protection, prosecution, that's massive. But when we work with our partners in the county, and I mean, you've met with Katrina, the head of the Clare Local Area Network, a number of times, Sergeant Katrina Houlihan. There's a great impetus in the county to work in partnership with a broad range of services. And Miriam touched on the regional advisory committees as well that worked from a Midwest perspective. There's great potential there, and this strategy can, and that's what, you know, I don't want to be negative. I mean, this is really a fantastic time and day and date in history that this strategy has been launched, and it can be, I want to be really optimistic about it. And it, with the goodwill and the political will, it can make a change, and that focus on as I said, the four pillars as opposed to just the prosecution side, the focus on prevention is massive. But we also need to look at, you know, the and what, oh, sorry, what's also come out of it, which is amazing, is the focus on children as victims in their own right. Up till now, children have been kind of seen as, you know, kind of appendages of the woman who is the victim, but the women, children are the victims in their own right. And but we need to maybe just tease that out a little bit and not look at children and young people as a homogenous group because they have very different based on their developmental stages. But another area I'm really hoping that we look at, as well as the prosecution side where you talked about the increase in the outcomes for people who are convicted, but also to have a look at the perpetrator, because ultimately they're at the centre of all of this. We wouldn't need these big strategies and these big costs if we didn't have perpetrators who felt emboldened and enabled by Irish society to commit these crimes. So, I mean, I'd like to see a little bit more of that. But to answer your question, there is a huge will within the county of Clare to address domestic abuse. We've seen that particularly in the last 3 years, but Clare Haven has seen that in 27 years of the constant goodwill and support that we have received from partners, from businesses and from just the general public.
And Miriam, how is it going to help from a regional level, from the entire Midwest?
I think, well, there's a couple of things that I'm hopeful about. Obviously, we're always hopeful that the current funding will be increased, but my sense is at the moment, even if it's not increased this year, next year, what the strategy is looking at is guaranteeing all the services on the ground multi-annual funding, so that at least when we do make our applications for our funding, we don't have to do it on an annual basis. And we will be able to plan a couple of years ahead rather than go cap in hand every November, December and then find out in January or in April or May what exactly the funding for the current year is going to be, you know. And that just even in us planning what we're going to do and how we're going to deliver services will be a huge benefit to us. Again, iterating what Siobhan has said about the other part of the strategy is the reform of the judicial system. We're very, very aware of the length of time it takes, even if a sexual assault or rape case is prosecuted. The time between reporting the assault and the case actually hitting court is approximately 3 to 4 years at the moment. That's way too long for a victim. So hopefully in the reform of that system, that time will be shortened. You know, it's more judges need to be appointed. Maybe that there would be regional courts. You know, there's a plethora of stuff that can be done. And it's not all going to happen in the next 6 to 12 months, but I am very hopeful that over the course of the 5 years, a big impact will be made.
Siobhan, how significant is it that the maximum sentence for assault causing harm will be doubled?
Fantastic for those cases that get there, you know. It would be brilliant.
Is that the big issue?
If anything is, it can be used as a deterrent, absolutely let's use it. You know, there's always carrot and stick. But an awful lot from our perspective now, obviously different from Miriam's, a lot of domestic abuse cases are heard in the family court. You know, it doesn't really get to criminal court at all. People are emboldened and enabled to commit these crimes and they go to family court and women get orders and they get protection that way, or they get support that way. For those cases that are brought, great, but there are many, many crimes being committed and that aren't, you know, to that extent, that also needs to make sure that, you know, there's a proper deterrent there. No perpetrator should feel that they are allowed to commit these crimes. And I think maybe some of what society shows us, that on the one hand there's a strategy and a lot of hand-wringing, but on the other side there is actions taking place in society whereby male violence and is kind of forgiven or excused or underwhelmed in how it's being reported. But yeah, I mean, anything, any deterrent is good.
Miriam, I just want to get your thoughts on some of the other headline elements of the strategy when it comes to schools. There's going to be an updated secondary school curricula at junior and senior cycle, and that's going to include consent, domestic violence, coercive control and the safe use of the internet, which seems like a positive step to instill the correct and proper information into the youngsters. Then when it comes to prevention training, though, do you think more prevention training is needed, that those on the front line should be offered the opportunity to avail of training or further training?
I think so. And I mean, I think I have always said that education is going to be key to developing the zero tolerance strategy. Education is going to be key. And we, in discussions with the minister, yes, we are looking at what the second level curriculum might be like. And we are also flagging that we need also to be going into primary schools. Now, maybe not rape crisis, but, you know, children are being influenced by the internet. Children are viewing pornography at a younger and younger age. We need to be educating our young people. And
overall,
we need to be supporting
though, Siobhan,
the frontline. We need to be supporting the frontline people like the teachers and the guidance counsellors that are actually going to be the first port of call for these students as well. So it's a double-pronged approach.
Overall, though, is this a positive day or yesterday, the approval and publishing of the plan a positive in terms of how changing how the country deals with domestic violence?
Yeah, like I said, I don't want to sound like I'm criticising. I'm not. Yesterday and today, as I said, are historical dates. As we talked about, this has been a a big consultation. It's heard from everybody, and it promises a lot, and you know, and even that it's been done in phases, the first 18 months, and then reflecting back, and then the next piece, and then reflecting back. It feels like it's a live document. It feels like it's going to really make an effort to address this issue, or to begin to address this issue in Ireland once and for all. I mean, 27 years in Clarehaven is a large, it's multi-generational at this stage now. We're dealing with it. So this, it's a time for optimism. Today and yesterday is a time of optimism, and let's hope the new agency with the interdepartmental cross-government remit will be able to bring everybody on board, no matter whether it's housing, health, children and youth affairs and justice, and they can all work together and have that four-pronged approach, which is kind of very well-rounded to address these issues. And then, you know, nothing is perfect, and then there will always be the next strategy that hopefully we can build on rather than correct. I think we're correcting maybe some of what happened in the second strategy in this strategy, but we can build on it in future years as well. But a very optimistic time, all going well, and, you know, that it does get implemented, obviously. And the accountability is important, you know, and that there are consequences, I suppose, if things aren't being implemented. And that's the promise, I suppose, of this new agency, that not only is there going to be accountability and oversight, but, you know, I'm hoping that there will be consequences if there's not. You know, that department or that minister would have to stand up and say why they haven't done X this last 6 months or 12 months or 18 months.
Okay, I just want to read to both of you a couple of messages that are coming in before we finish on a similar theme. Tina has been in touch on our text and WhatsApp number 086 1800 964, and says, "Morning, Alan. I'm just wondering why the abuser isn't removed from the home instead of the victims. To me, it would make more sense, but then government and sense never seem to go together. God help the victims." And Bernie also wondering why a woman has to leave her home, get the one that abused her out.
Yeah, and that's huge, and that's really the way a lot of international thinking is going now. You know, I suppose the concept even of refugees is getting a little bit dated. It is time for us, and that's what I said. We need to centre the perpetrator on this. All of this money, all of this effort, all of this time, all of this government involvement is because of the perpetrator. They are at the centre. They are the ones who are causing these issues. They are the ones who are breaking the law. So I absolutely agree, but people have a right to their home under the Constitution. people have, you know, you can't just be pulled out of home. A person, if they want, you know, if they're going to make a criminal charge, they have to make a statement. There's huge pressure, social pressure, family pressure on women and children not to make statements, not to rock the boat, just to move on. And I suppose what we're there is we're like the A&E in a hospital, the refuges like the A&E in a hospital. If a woman needs to get out quick. But I know the guards are doing a lot of work as well with perpetrators and with victims as well to work around some issues in that regard. But I totally agree with Tina and Bernie. Absolutely. Nobody should be allowed to commit crimes in their home and get away with it.